Bring greetings this morning in the name of our Lord Jesus, the one that we've come to worship together today, the one who showed us the way to live, and that includes our fathers. We are here especially on Father's Day, and we want to certainly give a tribute to our hardworking fathers here this morning and godly men who are endeavoring to raise their families and to take their place of responsibility in the fear of God. Father's Day sometimes is a day that makes fathers feel kind of guilty for our many shortcomings and struggles that we have in trying to keep everything together in a busy life. So not here to make you feel more guilty this morning, but rather to be an encouragement. So glad for this opportunity. This morning, I'd like to look at two fathers in the Bible, two objectives and two outcomes. And you probably guessed already, I'm talking about Abraham and Lot. Here in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 to 4, is where we first encounter them. The end of chapter 11 there talks about Terah taking his family out of Ur of the Chaldees and going down into Haran. Now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house and unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curses thee. And in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. So Abraham departed, as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him, and Abraham was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. So he was not actually in Ur of the Chaldees. Terah, his father, had come out of there, and the Bible doesn't really say why he left Ur, except it would kind of imply that he was trying to get his family into a better environment. He had something in mind for them, better than where they were, an environment that would help them to continue their faith in God. They weren't that many generations, actually, from Noah. In fact, Shem could very well have yet been alive at the time of Abraham's birth, at least. But so here was Abraham now, God calling him now out of Haran. Haran is in southeastern Turkey. It's when Ruth and I were in Turkey a number of years ago visiting the seven church sites, we saw signs to Haran. It's still called by the same name today, and it's down in the southeastern part of Turkey. We never actually went there, but that's where it was. And then they went down through Syria and into the land of Canaan. That's where God called him to go. And the thing that I would like to especially notice in Abraham's life is that he was a man who always put God first. That was his general character or characteristic of Abraham's life, is that he put God first. And that is a tremendous secret. And it's not so much of a secret, but I think it's a secret of his success. And that is that he put God first. And it wasn't that he didn't make some mistakes along the way, but his faith in God always brought him back. And he put God first. And so his faith in God is remarkable as we watch his life from the time of his call to go into Canaan until he was finally buried there in the cave of Machpelah in the area of Shechem. At 175 years old. And so if he was 75 years old when he was called out of Haran, then he would have been in Canaan for 100 years. And quite a legacy he left behind there. And then in contrast, we see Lot, also a man who served God, but a man whose priorities were more earthbound. He was not a man who put God first, but his priorities were more earthbound, and he made his decisions in regards to those priorities. The Bible tells us that Abraham looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. And so I believe that was the focus, the guiding light in Abraham's life. He looked for that city which hath foundation, whose builder and maker is God. And I think that is going to be the prerequisite for us, for we as fathers, if we're going to have a good outcome, as Abraham did in his son Isaac. And that our focus needs to be on that city which hath foundation, whose builder and maker is God. And I think that word with foundation is very urgent and very important, because without that foundation, we lose our way. We lose our anchor point. Lot had his focus on the things of this world. And it says, the Bible tells us, then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Remember the story about the herdsmen and the land not being able to contain them all. And so they decided and agreed to separate, and Abraham gave Lot the choice. And Abraham and Lot chose then to dwell in the cities of the plain. He pitched his tent towards Sodom. And as we see or observe the lives of these two men, we see that Abraham was actually a very devoted uncle. Just because Lot chose the best did not change Abraham's feeling toward Lot. Abraham still loved his nephew, and he wanted what was best for him, and he was there for him when Lot needed Abraham. And so we see that in the example of the Lot rescuing his, or Abraham rescuing his nephew Lot from the four kings that came and overtook Sodom and took Lot and all the people, and Abraham took his servants there, and they went and rescued Lot and brought them back again. Also, the intercession there with the three angels who warned him of the coming destruction of Sodom, and how Abraham negotiated with them. He had Lot in mind when he said, you know, if there's only five, would you still save the city? And they said, yes, we will spare it even for five. But there were not five found there. Both Abraham and Lot had their faith tested and tried many times. And Abraham was human. He made some mistakes. He went down to Egypt. He took Hagar to be his wife when the promised son did not come through Sarah. And he made some mistakes like that. But his anchor point was still there. He still had his focus on that city that hath foundation. And so he always came back. And I believe even in those cases that he did his best to train his family and to point them to the same God that he was serving, including Ishmael. His trust in God was always there. It was always solid, whereas Lot seemed to waver on most counts. And even though he still retained his identity as a God-fearing man, His compromising decisions finally led to disaster. And we just came through the books of Peter, and Peter said that just Lot was vexed with the wickedness of the city around him. And we can probably see some of Lot's character coming through as he sat by the gate, and he thought maybe he could change this thing through politics, and he took a prominent position in the city, and he was going to try to make things better, but it didn't work out that way. In that effort, he lost his family. The mandate of God has always come out from among them, and so I want to now look at the final outcome as it relates to their family. And we find, in Abraham's case, we find that in Genesis chapter 26, verses 2 to 5. It says, "The Lord appeared unto him and said, Go not down into Egypt, dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of." This is actually talking now to Isaac after Isaac was no longer under Abraham's tutorage. Abraham, I think, had died at this time. And so the Lord came now to Isaac and spoke to him and said, "Don't go down to Egypt to dwell in the land. But dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee, and will bless thee. For unto thee and unto thy seed I will give all these countries, and I will perform the oath which I swear unto Abraham thy father, and I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of heaven, and will give unto thy seed all these countries, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because that Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments and my statutes and my laws." And so the blessing of Abraham fell on Isaac, partly due to Abraham's faithfulness, partly due to Isaac's faithfulness. And as we look at these two men, we see that they were human, they were not perfect, but they had, in their heart, they were putting God first. And that's what it's going to take. And that's what it takes for us if we're going to succeed in bringing our families up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord with good success. Now we look at Lot there in Genesis, the 19th chapter, and what became of his end. In Genesis 19, 14, here we have the angels who came to lead Lot out of the city before they destroyed it. And Lot says in verse 14, "Went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters, and said, Up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. And when the morning arose, then the angels hastened Lot, saying, Arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters, which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city. And while he lingered, and the men laid hold upon his hand, and upon the hand of his wife, and upon the hand of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful unto him, and they brought him forth and set him without the city." And so we see here that when Lot did speak to his daughters, and he did try to warn them, that he seemed as one that mocked. Why so? Probably because of the many inconsistencies in Lot's life. They didn't take him serious. And then we go down to verses 29 and 30, the same chapter there, chapter 19. 29 and 30. "And it came to pass, when God destroyed the cities of the plain, that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow, when he overthrew the cities in which Lot dwelt." I thought it was significant there that even though Abraham wasn't there, God remembered Abraham and his intercession for Lot, and Lot benefited from that intercession of that godly man. And then verse 30, "And Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountain, and his two daughters with him, for he feared to dwell in Zoar, and he dwelt in a cave, he and his two daughters." And so there in that setting, Lot fathered two of the most ungodly tribes we have listed in the Old Testament, the Moabites and the Ammonites, descended from him. And we so we see here the contrast, the choices, decisions. One, a man who put God first always, and another who was willing to compromise and to say, well, you know, what's wrong with living in Sodom? I can still be a godly man, and I can do this and I can do that. But you know, as fathers, the decisions that we make, the positions that we take, leave an effect on our families that goes beyond even what we teach, what we have to say. And so our priorities, you know, what we allow. We can go on weekend camping trips. We can stay home and put up hay on Wednesday night. We can do all of those kind of things and say, well, what's wrong with that? Will I be condemned for that? But what it does, it breaks down our integrity, and it shows us where our priorities are. I'm just using those as two examples. But when we put God first, so what if the hay gets wet? And we will have our family in church on Sunday morning, whenever it's possible, and we'll be there on time. And I know those things can be done in a legalistic way, and it can be done harshly. But when it's done properly, in the right way, there is just something about it that is going to build character and conviction in the hearts and lives of our children. Even though our parents may be imperfect, and we all grew up in homes with imperfect parents, it's going to be much easier for our children to accept those imperfections when they see consistency and when they see that God is truly first. Abraham made some pretty big mistakes, but he still kept God first. And that's the point I would like to especially leave here this morning. So fathers, let's take example from Abraham. Abraham had a love for his children, but God always came first. Think of the sacrifice of Isaac. How tremendous that test that was. A test that I don't know where I would come out on a test like that. But he put God first, even in that. And it had to have an impact on Isaac's life. All the gadgets and expensive toys in the world will not touch and win the hearts of your sons and daughters like a godly example of faith, obedience, and self-denial. Going the second mile, not just living according to my liberties, but living according to my responsibilities. If you choose the way of Lot, don't expect a different outcome. For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. I have something here I shared earlier a number of years ago, and it's interesting, and I thought I'd share it again here this morning. And that is the legacy left by Jonathan Edwards, who was a Puritan preacher, a famous preacher back in his day in the 1700s, and a very respected man in his day. And there's things, of course, about Jonathan Edwards' life that we don't necessarily promote. He was a God and country man, and he, other things there, but he was a man who was devoted to God and a very effective preacher in his day, and the rest we leave with God. And he was blessed with 11 children. That would be, to me, a handful. I mean, that's a huge responsibility. 11 children. I admire big families. I come from a family of 12. But this is what it says about him. He would spend an hour conversing with his family and then praying a blessing over each child in the evening, in the days when he was at home. He was a busy man and gone sometimes, but when he was at home, he would spend an hour conversing with his family and then praying a blessing over each child. And there's a man by the name of A.E. Winship that decided to trace the descendants of Jonathan Edwards almost 150 years after his death. It had been the late 1800s. And this is what he found. Jonathan Edwards' legacy includes one U.S. vice president, one dean of law school, one dean of medical school, three U.S. senators, three governors, three mayors, 13 college presidents, 30 judges, 60 doctors, 65 professors, 75 military officers, 80 public office holders, 100 lawyers, 100 clergymen, and 285 college graduates. How can this be explained? Edwards was a godly man, but he was also hardworking, intelligent, and moral. And so this is what this Winship says about him. It says, much of the capacity and talent and intensity and character of the more than 1,400 of Edwards' family is also due to his wife, Sarah. And then there was another man that was... Someone noticed that in the penitentiary in New York that there were a group of prisoners or a history of prisoners there that linked back to one family. And so this research was done separately, and this man's name was Max Jukes. And says the legacy came to the people's attention when the family trees of 42 different men in the New York prison system were traced back to him. He lived in New York at about the same time as Edwards. The Jukes family originally was studied by sociologist Richard L. Dugdale in 1877. Jukes's descendants included 7 murderers, 60 thieves, 190 prostitutes, 150 other convicts, 310 paupers, 440 who were physically wrecked by addiction to alcohol. Of the 1,200 descendants that were studied, 300 died prematurely. And so you have this contrast. Does it make a difference? Of course it does. We should be grateful and thankful for a godly heritage and a godly legacy that's passed down to us. But the wonderful thing about God is that it doesn't matter where we come from. It doesn't matter if we come from Edwards or Jukes. Finally, we all need to come to that place of a personal decision, a personal commitment of our own, to where we say, God is first in my life. And it doesn't matter what my heritage is. It can end up to be a blessing, as it was to Abraham, that through him all the nations of the earth were blessed, and we are a part of that legacy.